All right. Well, today is the beginning of a brief series. It's two parts today. But that's all I need, okay, to get this out. And the name of this two-part series is Versus. Versus. The wisdom from above versus the wisdom from below. The wisdom from above versus the wisdom from below. The song we just heard that was speaking about smiling and gratitude and recounting what the Lord has done, that's an example of someone who's been informed by the wisdom from above. It's really important to keep this in mind because we're at a time where the two ways of thinking about what's smart to do are having are clashing with each other. And we get to decide whether we're going to draw from the wisdom of this world or the wisdom from below versus the wisdom from above. And we're going to return to a passage. Actually, we went over in detail last year when we were looking at the book of James, but I'm turning to it again because I think there's some more water in this well. So I'm going to read, in fact, I'm going to have you stand with me, actually. We're going to just read a few passages from the book of James. I only do this occasionally, but I want to get the thematic text here. We're reading from James 3, 13 through 18. I'm reading from the ESV, but it'll also be on the screen for you. And here we go. Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere, and a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. You may be seated. It is good to read the word of God out loud. All right, so we're just going to go verse by verse. We're going to focus on verses 13 through 16, which mainly we're going to cover the wisdom from below today, okay? And I know that doesn't sound like a very inspiring beginning, but I need you to understand the wisdom from below so that we don't get caught up in it because it's enticing. It's inviting. It's compelling. So let's just look at verse 13 here. It says, who is wise and understanding among you? I like this next line. By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. I'm going to make two statements about this verse. See that word meekness? Okay. Wise people are humble. Wise people are humble. Humility has become my favorite attribute of Jesus. It's the one I now aspire for the most, but it is also the one that is most painful to me. Because humility requires you to dispense with any claims you have on anything. You dispense with the claims you have to what you own, to having your own way. In fact, one of the things you have in the book of Corinthians when it describes love, love does not insist on its own way. It's pain. It's like that cold shower I take most mornings. I hear that cold showers are healthy for you, so I've been taking them, and every time I got to brace myself. Woo! I say that. My wife hears me. Woo! Man, this is every time. You know, it's good for me, so they say. right? But every time I got to brace myself, and that's what it means to be humble. It's like, woo, oh, here we go, you know, yeah. It's painful, but wow, what a quality. It's a pathway to wisdom. Okay, let me say something else about humility. Humble people have a generous posture. As I indicated throughout our theme this year is generosity, so we're going to be coming back to that in various places. Humble people have a generous posture. You go into situations prepared to give rather than to take or to insist on what's yours. Again, painful. But isn't that the pathway to being like Christ? Did we not just sing this morning about only boasting in the cross of Christ? It's painful, but it's powerful. Okay, now let's contrast that with what it says in verse 14. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. Well, if what we said about wisdom is true, then you can already guess what's true about this verse. Foolish people are prideful. Foolish people are prideful. Pride is always at the root of foolishness. It's hard to get rid of pride. So what you do, you don't try to get rid of pride, you just pursue humility. Humility is always dispelling pride out of our lives. In fact, we're not going to go into it deep this series, but you know, Peter talks about clothe yourself in humility. You don't want to leave the house without clothing yourself in humility. You got to stop and pause and say, hey, this world does not belong to me. I'm leaving today open, or you might do it when you get out of bed. God, this is your world. I'm here to do your will. You got to be like Jesus. What did Jesus say? I say what the Father tells me to say. I do what I see the Father do. Not my will, but his will. We gotta remind ourselves that we're not as humble as we think we are on any given day. So we just gotta clothe ourselves with it. But it's the foolish people who don't take that step and just go out seizing the day. And of course, prideful people have a stingy posture. They're not giving up much. You can have that over there, but okay, hold on now. Hold on. Watch out. You're getting too close. This part is mine. I already divided it evenly. Divided, here's your portion, here's my portion. In fact, you planned out the whole day so nobody would take your portion. That's pride. Not prepared to give. Stingy. We've all been there. I've been there. And we may not think we've been there, but the devil just has to press the right button with you. You'll get stingy. You're generally compassionate, generous, but the right button, you not giving that up. It might be the remote. It might be that last piece of chicken. It might be your sleep. It might be the Laker game today. You all set. You got your remote, your food. You want to see game one. But someone calls with an opportunity to serve. Why they ask you why the game is happening, I don't know. I'm not trying to make you feel good to you. I'm trying to watch the game too. I got to make sure I record it. It's coming on right when the service ends. So, I feel you. Okay, so I want to put that out there. Now we're going down to verse 15. This wisdom from below, right? This wisdom about that is prideful and stingy. James 3:15, it says, this is not the wisdom that comes down from above. We got to remember that. It seems right, but it's not right. But it's earthly, unspiritual, demonic. And we're going to get into that this morning. Each of these qualities, earthly, unspiritual, and demonic, has an oppositional relationship to the qualities God wants us to embody. They're in opposition to that. Earthly, unspiritual, demonic. So let's start with earthly. Now, in a vacuum, right, if we just think about the word earthly here, even if you look at it in the Greek, the word does not always have a negative connotation. It's just simply talking about the earth. So in and of itself, it's not negative. Its negative quality is emphasized in its comparison to the opposite quality. So when we talk about the earth, we're talking about the location of earth as opposed to the location of heaven. The emphasis is on the earth, what happens on the earth, what we can do on the earth, giving no consideration to what happens in heaven. Earth is where humans live and base their operations. Heaven is where God lives and bases his operations. We know he's omnipresent, but we know he has a headquarters. God created the two realms to interact with each other. God's original intent was to dwell on the earth with humans so that what he wills for heaven would also happen on earth. That's part of the Lord's Prayer. Earth was created to be a colony of heaven in the best of ways. Humans disturbed this when they sought their independence from God in an act of high treason. They stole government property. They used it as a resource to set up their own government, and they made a declaration of independence from God's rule. So their entire emphasis in segregating themselves from God is the earth. Second word, unspiritual. This is also a word that is not inherently negative. It's the Greek word psychikos, which is an adjective derived from the Greek word for soul. Okay, so the soul is not inherently negative. And here the emphasis here is on the mind, the will, and the emotions. We talked briefly about trichotomous versus dichotomous. I don't want to get too deep into that, but it's emphasizing human reasoning. It has to do with that part of man, and I'm quoting from Douglas J. Moo from the letter of James here. It has to do with that part of man where human feeling and human reason reign supreme. It's not inherently negative, but in the context it is. Why? Its negative quality is emphasized in its comparison to an opposite quality. This word unspiritual, it's referring to the nature of the material world as opposed to the nature of the spiritual world. Empirical observation and things we experience with our senses and our emotions and those things that we can detect in the material world, as opposed to the spiritual things that we understand through faith and revelation and our relationship with God, etc. So we got earthly, we've got unspiritual, and then finally we have demonic. Of course, demonic is inherently negative, and demonic has to do with supernatural beings from the kingdom of darkness, as opposed to supernatural beings from the kingdom of light. But here's the thing. Satan's powers of deception can make the demonic world appear neutral or positive. And this is part of why I'm talking about this, to expose his deception. In fact, 2 Corinthians 11:14 says this, "And no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light." He's crafty. Now, back to this issue of pride. The wisdom from below is actually centered in pride. The wisdom from below rebrands pride. It's a pride rebrand, right? Presenting it as a virtue instead of a vice. So going back to the example, I say, you can see this, you can go online and see this, because it happened not too long ago, with the woman who got spit in the face, and, you know, the woman who spat in her face did get what was coming to her. She got beat down. Okay, but as a society, we glory in getting vengeance on people. We validate. Now, you don't let someone do that. Now, I'm not validating the spitting. I'm not even saying that the woman shouldn't have responded. And again, I already told you, I don't know what I would have done. I don't know. Okay, but what I'm saying is we validate people saying, I'm not going to let people disrespect me like that. And we do things in the name of affirming our ego. Now, let's go back over these three words again and talk about how the wisdom from below rebrands pride. So let's look at the word earthly again. Earthly places the focus on what happens in the human realm. In our pride, we think the answers to Earth's problems reside on the earth, where we live and have our base of operations. We don't consider that what saves our world could come from another world. We think all the answers are here. We just get some more research, get someone else in office, get some more activism, do some more reading, do some more campaign. It's all in the earth. Because we think we can fix it. Yes, we imagine it in movies. That's where our superheroes come from. But superhero movies really express our own vanity. We imagine supernatural beings that possess our flaws. That's really, if you ever read the Iliad or the Odyssey, or you read about Greek mythology, that's really what the Greek gods are. They're just superhumans. Humans with superpowers, essentially. In essence, we create God in our image, thinking we can become super enough to save ourselves. Let's look again at the word unspiritual. How is this tied to pride? Where it places, unspiritual places the focus on human nature. In our pride, we focus on what humans are and what they can comprehend about the natural world without God. All empirical, science. We create an independent evaluation of good and evil through scientific investigation, sensory experience, or what we know directly from our five senses, and psychological idolatry, privileging what our emotions and preferences tell us are true. We center truth in our human perception, experience, and investigation. That's pride. We think we know. We think we can know. We just keep believing in ourselves. And then, of course, there is the demonic. Obviously, the demonic is tied to pride, but I'm going to spend some time here. Okay, now I'm going to remind you that we have digital notes. So if you need that, that is available to you. Where some of what I'm saying, I put in there, and I'm only saying that because I'm going to get into some terms. And of course, you can always listen to this again. I know some of you feverishly take notes. So you don't have to do that unless you want to do that. You can do it now. You can watch it later. But some of the terms I'm using, I do put in the notes, so it may be helpful for you. Talk about this demonic part in pride. So here's the deal with pride. Pride is a conduit for demonic activity. That alone should motivate us to pursue humility. Because even the smallest bit of pride puts us in a position to traffic evil. The slightest bit of it. It's almost like, you know, when you cleaning your house, you know, you can't, you have a house near where some ants are, you can't keep nothing out. You can't keep nothing out. The smallest bit of sugar. Here they come. The ants are marching two by two. Come on. Whatever that song is, they sing it. They singing it. Coming in for the cookie, whatever it is. You can't get, you gotta be the same. You gotta, the same with pride. You gotta be meticulous. Satan will traffic evil through you. You may be the kindest, nicest person. The smallest bit of pride. The satanic world extends its influence on the earthly world through human pride. You know, you ever see the movie The Matrix? Some of you did, some of you didn't. Well, part of the premise of the movie is that machines use humans as batteries. So humans are born, they put them to sleep, and they put their whatever things inside the humans, and they use the humans for energy. And one of the signature lines of the film is turning a human into a battery. Well, okay, we can use that analogy because that's how demons use humans as batteries. And guess what the lithium in those batteries are? Pride. Pride. They feed on our pride. Pride gives them access. And nobody's slick here. You're not too slick. For the devil invented slick. You're not going out slick, slick. You can't reserve a little pride on the side, you know, just to save it for a rainy day. For you want, when you want to give somebody the business and don't want to let somebody take advantage of you. Can't do that. He's going to use it. Pride helps to create, and okay, bear with me. I'm going to say this term. So just stay with me here. And it's also in your notes. A parasitic, symbiotic relationship between demons and humans. I'm going to describe it. I'm going to explain it, but I'm just going to put that word out there. Pride helps to create a parasitic, symbiotic relationship between demons and humans. Okay, I'm going to define that. Some of y'all took science in school, right? Okay. A symbiotic relationship or symbiosis is a relationship between two different, I'm quoting from a website here, organisms in which the interaction benefits one or both of them. So they're two different organisms. They're not the same organism, but they have a relationship where there's benefits accrue to either one of the organisms or both of the organisms. And organisms in this kind of relationship are called symbionts. Okay, relationship, two different organisms. I'm just going to put this out as an example. Let's say a frog and a giraffe. They don't have a symbiotic relationship in nature, but I'm just telling you, okay? A frog and a giraffe, they have a relationship. One or both of them is benefiting from the relationship. You get it? Okay, that's the relationship between demons and humans. Okay, let's keep going. Now, there are different categories of symbiotic relationships with varying degrees of benefit to one or both of the symbionts. I'm not going to list all of them, but I'm going to give you a couple of examples. One real symbiotic relationship is between bees and flowers. I know a flower is a plant, but remember, it's an organism. It's a living thing. So what happens, right? The flower gives nectar to the bee, right, which they use for honey. And as the bee flies from flower to flower, it's pollinating the flowers so that the flowers can be reproduced. In this case, it's a mutually beneficial symbiotic relationship. The bee benefits and the flower benefits. Does that make sense? Okay. Well, there's another kind of relationship, which I just mentioned. between demons and humans. It's a parasitic symbiotic relationship. And some of you already know that that's not a positive thing, because you know what a parasite is. One organism gets the benefit and another organism is abused. Example, ticks, mosquitoes, they benefit at our expense. We get no benefit from mosquitoes flying on our skin and sucking our blood. They do. But guess what they do? They pass disease from other organisms into our bodies. It's parasitic. It's parasitic. A parasitic symbiotic relationship is when one symbiont benefits at the expense of another. So, here's the thing. Human relationships with demons appear to be mutual. This is what I'm getting to. They appear to benefit you. This is what Satan was presenting to Jesus. We can both get something out of this, brother. All I'm asking is for you to worship me. That's all I'm asking. This small little request. You can have it all, brother. Come on, spiritual being to spiritual being. It appears mutual, but they're only ever parasitic. Why does the relationship appear to be mutually beneficial? Well, because here's the deal. Humans receive glory. Satan promises glory. But then Satan receives influence over the human world to expand his kingdom and receive worship. He will give you glory. He will let you shine. You go do your thing. That's right. But I will leverage your pride to extend my influence, my government, and to convince people to worship me. And people filled with pride, they're cool with that. Because pride blinds them to the truth, and they're after what they want. They're after what they feel they're entitled to. They're after that. I'm finally getting my payday. I've been working for this. But it's actually parasitic. Why? Because Satan sucks the life out of you. He chews you up and spits you out. He lifts you up higher so your fall can be harder. He didn't care about you. He is in it for him. Satan can exploit you directly through demonic possession, but he don't have to possess you. He can exploit you indirectly through influence. Newsflash, Satan is an influencer. He's been doing it long before social media. He is the original influencer. When the scripture calls him the father of lies, that's partly what it's talking about. He manipulates people through the mass marketing of deception. What does this tell us in 1 Timothy 4 and 1? It says, now the Spirit expressly says that in latter times some will depart from the faith by what? Devoting themselves to deceitful spirits and teachings of demons. Why would you consume the teaching of a demon? Not if I put it like that. But the reason why you would is because it's paired with the spirit of seduction. He's seducing you to the point where he's spitting his doctrine to you, putting it in your mind and heart, and you don't even see it as bad. Some of us have had relationships with seducing people. And the whole time they were after our money or this or whatever it is they was after. They didn't care about us. They were seducing. And they were saying crazy. If you stop and listen to it, I'd be like, that was crazy. Why not pay attention to it? Because they were seducing you. Proverbs talks about the young man being seduced by the married woman. He can't see. Dude, this woman don't love you. She bored. Her husband come back every 6 months. She bored. You boy number 58. She got y'all on a schedule. He can't see that. Why? He's seduced. And what's Satan's first move when he wants to seduce? How does he introduce you to his doctrine? We talked about it a few weeks ago. Wounds. It's easy for wounded people to become vengeful, entitled, self-righteous. In fact, you must be intentional not to become that if you are wounded. Predators go after wounded animals. You seen Discovery Channel? What's 1 Peter 5:8? How does it describe the devil in 1 Peter 5:8? It says this: be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. And who does he look for first? The wounded people. And if the world hasn't wounded you, he'll shoot an arrow himself. He's patient. See, Satan wounds humans while they are children so that they become adult influencers who traffic his doctrines. Some of the most famous people in the world, wounded. Wounded. He does not play fair. He sets it up from the beginning. He knows your family history. He knows all your tendencies, the triggers, all that kind of stuff. He sets it up so that you will be wounded. Don't give in to it. I know. It's like you're in that situation. You want to question your family, your parents. You want to question God. It's easy to do, but understand, it's Satan's covert operation. He is setting you up. Then he's going to present an opportunity to you later that looks like, here's my out. I'm finally going to get revenge on everybody. He's using you. Okay, let's keep going. There's hope, right? Some of this is going to be part two, right? But I got to paint this picture for you. So you don't fall. We got to be sober, as 1 Peter was saying. And we can't be sober if we don't call it like what it is. Okay. James 3:16 says this: for where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. Let me say something about this, right? So the wisdom from below makes people who are contentious look intelligent and courageous. That's why they're so contentious. They're just, you know, they're doing all this stuff and they look like they're fighting for whatever they're supposed to have, et cetera. And they look smart and courageous and valid. Let's validate all those people. All that's not coming from the right spirit, though. It's coming from jealousy and selfish ambition. What does it mean to contend? The online dictionary: struggle to overcome difficulty or anger, engage in competition or a campaign to win or achieve something, or assert something as a position in an argument. Basically, it's a fight. It's a fight. So the wisdom from below compels you to fight for what you need and want. And it compels you to fight against people who get in the way of what you need and want. And you feel like I should be able to do this because I've been wounded, and identify whichever party is responsible for your wounding, and now you get to get them back. That is not how Jesus operates. It's seductive. It's seductive. Jealousy and selfish ambition are how we cope with our fallen state. And this is where we're going to close out here. Okay, I'm going to read this last passage from Genesis, and it's going to put this in perspective. So we're going to read this curse to Adam, okay? Genesis 3, 17 through 19, it says this. And to Adam he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Check this out. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Okay, so note that. The ground's cursed because of him. Okay, it's going to be painful to get a produce from the ground. Verse 18, thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. Verse 19, check this out. By the sweat of your face. Okay, hard work, right? You shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Now, how did this passage tie into the jealousy and the ambition? Because of the fall, we toil with the soil of the ground and the soil of our bodies. Remember what it says. Our bodies are dust. They're going back to the dust. It's dust. The earth will not give you its goods unless you toil with it. Before the fall, we had every earthly resource at our disposal, and we didn't have to toil. But now we have to fight for it. We got to toil with the earth and toil with other people for control of it. It's competitive. And the spoils go to the smartest, the fastest, the hardest working, the most innovative. We all feel it, don't we? You got to work hard for that promotion. We want to get our kids in the best sports program, the best school, this and that. And we got to do this. We got to do that. It's competitive. We're fighting. You hear somebody doing well. You FOMO. FOMO. Fear of missing out. Somebody already got it. We got to work harder. Guess what's happened on the other end? Our bodies. So on the one hand, we're competing with other humans for resources. Keep in mind, look around the world. Most of the world consists of people who don't have a whole lot. And everybody's trying not to be in that number. So you trying to get ahead, even if you got to, you know, push down somebody right behind you because you got to get in there first. Only so many people can get into the school. Only so many people can get the job. Only so many people can get the house. Only so many people can do this. Only so many people can go to the NBA. Only so many people can do that. What's happening on the other end? At the same time, our bodies won't give us its goods unless we toil with it. So before the fall, our bodies were eternally vibrant and energetic. Now to secure a relatively long life of high quality, you've got to toil. Anybody ever seen 40, 50, 60? Guess what happened? Oh, your body started talking to you. Your body started talking to you. Like, I used to think weight training was for people who just want to tone up. Weight training is to do regular stuff. You get to an age where it's like, I gotta do this every day? Just so I can walk out the house and just, you know, say hi to people? I used to look at grown folks strange, you know, when they go to the restaurant, it's like, that's how you getting? Oh, I'm getting a steak. What you talking about? Now I go to Burger Joints and I'm like, I'll take the salad. Let me get that gluten-free biscuit. That lactose-free butter, I'll take that. Daddy, what you eating? Ah, it's good, son. It's good stuff. Ah. But if you want to have, that's what you got to do. Why? Because you're fighting the gravitational pull of the soil of your body going back to the soil in the ground. You got to toil because of the fall. If you don't do it, you will not be mobile. And it's like, come on, gluten-free biscuit, let's go. And it's pressure. Got to get it done by 20. Got to get it done by 30. Got to get it done by 40. Got to get it done by 50. And we feel so stressed out about it, we're willing to curse people out, fight people, be mean, because they're taking what we're trying to get, and we got to compete with everybody. That's the wisdom of this world. But guess what? Do you want out of this rat race? There's another way. Next week, we're going to talk about how to get out of that. It's called the wisdom from above. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. Let's pray.